Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, Tuesday afternoon, March 4th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. Some vehicle manufacturers are looking to outer space for their next growth business. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, President Trump has imposed sweeping tariffs on goods imported from Canada and Mexico, and also increased the penalty on items from China. Let's discuss the potential economic implications with Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission and economic futurist at AndrewBush.com, based in Charlotte, North Carolina. Andrew, thank you for joining us today. And what is the end game to this trade war that the U.S. has chosen to ignite between its two closest neighbors? If you're in the White House, and what President Trump, what is his vision for how this is going to end for American consumers?
Great question, because there's so much uncertainty around this policy. We just really, for the markets and for the world, we're not sure what his end game is. Looking on the surface, you would think that, you know, he said something about fentanyl. Hey, great. But it's really not about that. It's really about what he perceives to be an imbalance between countries and trade. They think, the Trump administration thinks, that if you're running a trade deficit, that that's a bad thing and that that needs to be corrected. And that's what he's going to do by putting tariffs on. But I mean, tariffs are great, except that they raise inflation, slow economic growth, cut profits, increase unemployment, worsen inequality, diminish productivity, increase global tensions. I mean, other than that, they're fantastic.
Now, what was the state of play between the United States, Mexico, and Canada prior to the ratification of the North American Free Trade Agreement, which has been demonized in many quarters of the country, and that that belief seemed to have run across the entire political spectrum. Even Ross Perot, you know, back in 1992 and 93, was talking about the giant sucking sound of industrial jobs being taken out of the U.S. But what was trade between the U.S., Canada, and Mexico like prior to NAFTA? And then how did that change for the American consumer?
It was super inefficient. And basically, you created free trade zones between Canada and Mexico, and trade grew massively. We saw big changes in automobile manufacturing that benefited both countries, or all three countries. They went from NAFTA, right? And then we went to USMCA, or USMCA, under the Trump administration. So they renegotiated it. They made it actually better for the U.S. It has been doing what it said it was going to do, which is fantastic. It improves growth, makes all three economies more efficient. You get more trade between the countries. The problem is that if you look at the world as a zero-sum game, that's the wrong way of looking at it. Mutually beneficial economic policies are great. Trade deficits occur for a number of different reasons. Now, that's between our three countries. If you're talking about China, that's a little different game because they don't play by the WTO rules. They don't play by the rules that a lot of other people play by. They steal a lot of intellectual property. They manufacture at a really highly subsidized rate. They're going to continue to manufacture even if they're losing jobs or even if they're losing profits. So they operate in a very different type of economic structure than the rest of the free world. So I would say what's really disturbing about having these tariffs is that these are trade partners we do a lot of business with, and they're our friends, not our adversaries like Russia or China. So this is really troubling from a number of standpoints, and that's why the markets are selling off.
Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission and economic futurist at andrewbush.com based in Charlotte, North Carolina. Thank you for sharing your insights today. Coming up, major automakers are getting into the satellite and rocket business. We'll talk about that next.
This hour continues.
Toyota and Honda are among automakers investing in rocket and satellite technology. Let's see what's drawing them to that sector. We're joined by Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media and former tech editor for the Today Show, based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Paul, thank you for joining us today. And ever since the first global positioning satellite was launched in the late 1970s, it seems like the relationship between the car companies and outer space has just been getting closer and closer, and now it seems like two automakers are getting into the business themselves.
I'll tell you what, the relationship that's changed the most is my relationship with a paper map. In other words, I haven't looked at a map in a long time, and I guess that the title of this segment for me anyway is literally vertical integration. I mean, it's as literal a vertical integration as you can get. These car companies, Toyota and Honda in particular, of course Tesla with its rockets and so on, they're all about finding another revenue stream. And the revenue streams are generated by people who, that's the drivers and owners of the vehicles, who want more information while they're driving. But it's also being generated for example, insurance companies who want to know, can we monitor your driving? If we can, we'll lower your rates. Of course, if they're monitoring my 16-year-old's driving, then my rates will not go down. But the point is that that it's revenue streams that they really want. They don't want to just sell a vehicle and have it end. OnStar was one of the first big successful versions of this, and you could buy the service from GM or any GM product, and it would connect you with those satellites, and lo and behold, you could get roadside assistance and all kinds of other stuff. But in the end, it's about revenue streams. That's why those companies are investing in rockets and satellites.
And also, I would imagine, given that most with modern cars, your car fix more often than not is a software update or a software upgrade, chances are getting in touch with the Honda satellite makes those software upgrades easier to execute.
That's exactly right. In fact, that's a great example because, I have an electric vehicle, a Volvo, and when I get software updates, I no longer have to go to the dealership. Now, that's delightful for the customer, of course, but it's also delightful for the dealership because that will be a profit center if they can gather information and they don't have to service you while, in person. So results, your margins are infinite in that situation. So yes, that's exactly right. Software updates, and these are more and more common, by the way. Teslas, Volvos, and Mercedes in particular, and Audi, and all the Volkswagen group, they all depend on satellite updates of your car's software. And instead of you having to go in and spend a lot of time and take up a bay in a service dealership, guess what? Now they can do that for free, for quickly over the air.
Now, you mentioned that insurance companies would be very interested to see follow your driving patterns and base your premium based on your driving habits as they exist in the wild in a monitored setting. But who's going to write the rules of the road on privacy when it comes to using that satellite data? Who has access to it, and how can they use it?
I'll tell you what. The number one question is that. I mean, how much am I sharing? And in the end, GM got in trouble for oversharing. Ford got in some trouble too. In other words, there's a fine line between, hey, this is helpful, and hey, this is intrusive. And that's exactly what folks are trying to figure out right now.
Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media, former tech editor for the Today Show in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. Coming up next, deciding if you should purchase a warranty with your new vehicle.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Concern about the cost of repairs may have you considering buying a warranty with a new vehicle. Let's look at the potential benefit with Matt Jones, spokesman for TrueCar in Los Angeles. Matt, thank you for joining us today. And this is a real contentious discussion that you could have about whether or not an extended warranty is worth it or just a way for you to line the pockets of the entity that is granting the warranty.
Yeah, this has always been like a contentious subject. I think both sides could potentially be right. You know, if you're back in the day thinking about being able to repair a car, you know, in your backyard or your garage, or you talk to your buddy or something, and somebody offers you a warranty for something that you can do for yourself, I could see why people would be against that. But as these new cars become essentially like, you know, driving computers, I don't know how valid that argument is anymore.
Yeah, that kind of dovetails on the discussion that we had yesterday on the Noon Business Hour regarding when the insurance company determines if a vehicle is total, just because there's so much tech inside every nook and cranny of a brand new car. Because even if you kiss the bumper, as it were, a minor dent or ding, something that could have easily been buffed out not too long ago, you never know if you're damaging a $6,000 microchip in the process.
You're 100% right. I mean, a lot of these cars, like, you know, some cars, for example, have cameras in their bumpers or right above their bumpers. And I think when we get to the conversation about warranties, the car maker that you're buying the car from probably didn't make the camera. They probably also didn't make the brains of your infotainment system. And these things sometimes have different warranties than the car itself. You know, and when people think about cars and longevity, you think about engines and transmissions, and those are generally made by the group of people that have their name on the car. But all the stuff that we rely upon every day, like, you know, my Bluetooth, your navigation, your backup cameras, all those other things, they're not necessarily made by those brands. So having a warranty for people who are buying a new car and considering buying a warranty that covers everything, it makes good sense, because I think it escapes a lot of people's like radar that if you take a car to a dealership for a repair, I mean, a repair rate could be $250, $300 an hour. That's just for the labor, not even including the parts. So I think warranties are probably more valuable now than they have been in the past.
Now, if you are shopping around for a warranty, where is it? Obviously, there are warranties that cover a lot of stuff, and then there are warranties that cover very little repair, or a warranty that would require a big copay that goes along with it. So if you're shopping around for an extended warranty, where's a good place to begin?
Well, I always like buying the warranty from the brand of the car that I'm buying. So if I bought a Toyota product, I want a Toyota warranty. A Mercedes product, I want a Mercedes warranty. Those warranties tend to be the most comprehensive. But within those two, they're exactly what you said. You have a choice. Do you want to just cover the powertrain, or do you want to do what a lot of people call the wraparound? And in my opinion, the magic is in the wraparound, because those are the things that are, like I said, very expensive to repair. All of the non-mechanical things, all the electronic things, the air conditioning, the heated seats, all the things that we rely upon for our everyday drive. Now here's the thing, is I think there's a little clue about the value of these warranties just in when you buy a new car, because often the stuff that's made by the manufacturer, you know, the engine, transmission, all that stuff, that'll be covered for 5 years, but the stuff that's not made by the manufacturer will only be covered for 3. And I sometimes think that's a little bit of an indication that says, hey, if there's something that's going to fail, it's going to be the things beyond the engine and transmission. And that's where things get really, really sticky.
Matt Jones, spokesman, TrueCar in Los Angeles, thank you for joining us today. Still ahead in Travel Tuesday, the latest on scams targeting travelers.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. A shooting outside of a Chicago school leaves a teenager wounded. There's worry about the impact on food prices from President Trump's tariffs on goods from Mexico and Canada. In Travel Tuesday, we'll take a look at some of the scams that target people who are on cruises. And Walgreens is getting closer to becoming a private company. WBBM Business, the markets are lower. The Dow is down 576 points. The NASDAQ is down 93. The S&P 500 is down 65. We have 47 degrees right now in Chicago. Under cloudy skies, it's 12:31, topping our news at the half hour. A teenager is being treated for a gunshot wound to the thigh suffered near a charter school on Chicago's South Side this morning. Police say it happened just before 7:45 outside of the Perspectives Leadership Academy at 85th and Lafayette. The 15-year-old was walking when two males got out of a black car and opened fire. She was struck in the thigh and taken in fair condition to Comer Children's Hospital. The shooters got back in the car, which quickly left the scene. The price of some of your favorite fruits and vegetables could soon skyrocket under the new tariff regime that took effect.
This time of year, about 90% of the fruits and vegetables sold at the San Francisco produce market are imported from Mexico, and many wholesalers are worried about the 25% tariffs.
It's going to adversely affect our business, no question about it.
Produce broker Mike Richard says higher prices will have to be passed on to consumers.
Things are higher priced, they're not as many people are going to buy.
But Tom Wheeler at SNL Produce hopes the tariffs will be short-lived.
If, in fact, the trade is out of balance, then I think it should be in balance. And if tariffs are a way of getting us there, then I agree with it.
Matt Bigler for CBS News, San Francisco.
We will bring you the president's address to Congress and the Democratic response live here on WBBM starting tonight at 8 o'clock. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are lower today. Joining us with the latest on today's sell-off on Wall Street is Gary Kultbaum, President Kultbaum Capital Management in Orlando, Florida. Find him online at GaryK.com. Gary, thank you for joining us today. And let's put this into perspective, and that is the markets, even the Dow, which has dropped about 601 points now, is down a little over 1.25%. The NASDAQ has recovered somewhat, and the S&P 500 down 1%. So what do you make of all that's happened today?
Well, what we are hearing is it's about tariffs, and it's about the Georgia. They came out with the Atlanta Fed and saying we're in recession now, where the economy is contracting. So it's not just about today. It's about the last few weeks. Actually, I would suggest the last 2 or 3 months, because pretty much everything economically sensitive that I follow, whether it's Caterpillar or my favorite one, United Rentals, because they're in so many parts of business, these stocks have been getting destroyed over the last couple of months. So my worry is there's a combination of the economy is slip-sliding away, and now the tariffs, which I'm completely against, but nobody's listening to me.
Now, when it comes to some of those indicators that you pointed out, starting with the Atlanta Fed, their gross domestic product, their GDP nowcast, which saw the economy not only contracting, but contracting by the highest level since, or the lowest level, I should say, since 2008. And, you know, what is that based on? Where are they getting their data? Where is that assumption coming from?
Well, they have their analysts go out and they look at imports, they look at exports, they look at the services, and they just put these numbers together. But keep in mind, I think 3 weeks ago, they had a plus 2.5, so it is a moving target. So I don't give it that much weight, though I give it a little weight. What I do give weight is watching the transports implode, the airlines, the cruise lines, the truckers and the rails. As I mentioned, United Rentals and Caterpillar and Parker Hannifin and PPG Industries and the chemical stocks. I'm pretty sure that the market's pretty smart and telegraphs a lot of things. So that's a worry. And of course, the semiconductors, which are in everything, they're bouncing today, but they've imploded over the last couple of months. So definitely we're on watch. The tariffs do not help, because regardless of what we're being told, it is a tax on business who pays the tariff to the Treasury and then decides if they're going to pass it on to the consumer. But no matter what, somebody pays for it. And to think we're penalizing other countries by doing it, no, we're penalizing our own business and consumers by doing it. And that's by definition.
Is this based in some part on an actual deterioration of business conditions, or is this just a lack of business investment that is born from confusion about what's going on right now?
I think it's a combination. Just remember, business is also is how you feel. If you run a business, how are you feeling? What are you seeing? And what are you thinking? And sometimes it tends to feed on itself, and that's where you get trouble. The other part of the equation I have to mention, the 10-year yield has plunged, and normally stocks would go higher when that happens. That's also indicative of something that may be amiss, and it's something that has to be watched very, very closely, because you have a very indebted economy, very indebted consumer. Don't want to see the economy tip over. It'll be tough to come out of.
And then what should we keep an eye on as this moves forward? What are some you mentioned a couple of troubling indications. What are just some other things that we should watch as this progresses?
Well, I think the market's pretty smart. That's number one. But number two, and I think you have to watch the president here. Again, with all due respect, the president gets to make the decisions. But again, a tariff is a tax. And if he says lower taxes are great for the economy and that's what he wants to do, well, here's higher taxes. That means it would be the opposite. So, again, I watch the markets judiciously, and they've been saying something very important. By the way, the AI stocks have been crumbling also. That may be telling you something about all this spending talk from all these companies saying we're going to spend $200 billion and $400 billion. I'm kind of doubtful on some of those numbers also. So there's a bunch of things all happening at once. I think the greatest indicator is the market itself. And right now, notwithstanding some bouncing around today in tech, it's definitively under some pressure.
Gary Kaltbaum, President, Kaltbaum Capital Management, Orlando, Florida. Find him online at GaryK.com. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Travel Tuesday, ways not to fall victim to scammers when you're on a cruise.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday for planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday. Scams targeting cruise passengers are everywhere, from fake freebies and picture tricks to unmetered taxis. Scammers are constantly looking to take advantage of cruise passengers, especially while in port. Let's get some advice on this Travel Tuesday, sponsored by Preflight Airport Parking, with Ilana Schattauer, founder and content creator for the YouTube channel Life Well Cruised and LifeWellCruise.com, based in Montreal. Ilana, thank you for joining us today, and free of charge, by the way. We have not, there's still no tariff on Noon Business Hour guests from Canada. So thank you for joining us today. And
thanks, Rob.
You've spent a lot of time on the water, and I would imagine you've seen it all when it comes to scammers trying to separate cruise passengers from their money.
Yes, absolutely. Both in cruise ports of call and these days online.
And what are some of the most recent ones that you have seen in person or are aware of?
So some of the things, it sounds really simple, but cruise passengers and tourists, I guess of any sort, really can be easy targets. One of those is the bait and switch. So even, for instance, in some of the shops in the cruise ports of call, tourists or cruisers are going to go in, they're going to buy maybe a piece of jewelry or a handbag. And then what happens is, after they've negotiated and they're paying their money, somebody else is packaging up that item. And what happens oftentimes is cruisers go back to the ship, open up their items, only to find out that those items have actually been switched out. So it really is important if people are buying something, especially if it has value, a little bit expensive, to really watch to see that they are getting the item that they pay for.
Now, I know chapter one of the book of Street Smarts is don't look like a tourist, but when you're in a cruise port of call, it's almost impossible not to look like a tourist. You've got your cruise lanyard on. Maybe you have a couple of wristbands from whatever port adventure you have signed up for. You just look like somebody who's fresh off the boat, literally. And but are there things that you could do to look a little more like you belong as opposed to someone who clearly is on a cruise?
You're right. You definitely want to try at least to blend in a little bit. So what I do is I always do tuck my lanyard away. So I'm not going to show that. I'm going to keep any of my jewelry that's a little bit pricier, even if it looks flashy, I'm going to keep that in my safe in my cruise cabin. So I'm not going to draw any extra attention. And I'm going to have a handbag that's got a good zipper on it. So I'm not going to have an open tote or even, you know, a fashionable basket bag. I'm going to make sure that I am not an easy target.
Now, are you better off then if you are a cruise passenger and you can arrange your onshore adventures through the cruise line inside a self-contained ecosystem? Are you just better off doing that if you're a newbie and you don't want to get ripped off? That a situation where you get off the ship, you get in the cab, you go to the beach, you come back, and everything is under the cruise line's control, that maybe that's just the better bet, especially if you're kind of a cruise novice?
Well, that's definitely an idea, and you can do that because, like you said, it's quite convenient and it's very self-contained. But you can also book with a reputable third-party vendor that sells excursions. So it's definitely something you can do. I think as long as you're researching and you know the cruise port a little bit, you can feel pretty comfortable. But like you said, have a little bit of street smarts to make sure that you're not caught up.
So, in other words, if someone is offering you a free bracelet, if an off-brand copyrighted character wants to take a picture with you, or if someone claims to be a crew member on the ship and they want to talk to you and show you something, those are red flags and you should probably walk away.
Yeah, definitely. And fake Ubers and fake taxi drivers as well. So you want to make sure if you're taking an Uber that you're actually using the Uber app, or if you're taking a taxi, that you are getting into a taxi where it is a licensed driver and they're using their meter.
Ilana Schatauer, founder and content creator for the YouTube channel Life Well Cruised. Find her online at lifewellcruised.com, based in Montreal, Quebec. Thank you for joining us today. Join us this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday. And still to come, a private equity firm has its sights set on Walgreens.
Discussing the news affecting your money, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Private equity firm Sycamore Partners nearing an acquisition of Walgreens Boots Alliance. We'll discuss how it may impact customers, employees, with Bruce Japson, Chicago-based healthcare writer for Forbes. Bruce, thank you for joining us today. And it seems like the first thing that Sycamore would do is break up that Walgreens Boots Alliance.
Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, it's interesting with, Walgreens has been in the, it's been rumored that they were going to be taken over by private interests and so forth. Sycamore is not that well known. I think they might have purchased Staples, though they've been in the retail, more of the retail space, not necessarily retail pharmacy space. But Walgreens has had problems, and Walgreens is already, of course, closing a lot of stores and been trying to, you know, reduce some debt and et cetera, et cetera. So it'll be interesting to see. I think one of the things that people forget is, you know, when Walgreens did merge with Boots, which are the big drugstore chain based in the United Kingdom, is that they would maybe spin that back off, and once the private company, if they are indeed taken over by private interests, that they would sell off the overseas operations and focus here in the United States. I think what people can expect is, I mean, people's purchasing of prescriptions is changing. A lot of people do mail order. A lot of people do online, you know, whatever. There are increasingly a number of treatments that you can go into the drugstore and the pharmacist can give you as prescribed to you. So Walgreens wants to retreat from their whole idea that they are going to be on every corner in America, because that's just not working. as well, given people's changing retail habits. So my guess is that if a private company takes over, there's going to be more cost cutting. That's usually the way it is. Nobody likes to hear that. So I would say that there are possibly, if you have two Walgreens within a mile of you, that may change in the future. So it's a stay tuned thing. We'll know soon. It seems like, based on the rumors, they're getting closer to a deal.
Now, does Walgreens, do they own their stores, or are they just merely leasing the space as part of some larger development? I mean, is there money to be made in selling the land, basically?
I'm not as well versed on that, but I do believe Walgreens does have a lot of leases and long-term leases and a mix of ownership and real estate and all sorts of stuff there. So what they would do with that, who knows? I do know, for example, with CVS, they have been they purchased a Chicago-based company called Oak Street Health, which has a lot of senior care centers, and they have been converting some of their older stores into these pharmacies with attached to adjacent to a senior health center, and so they've been reconfiguring the real estate there. Whether Walgreens does that, who knows? I think that the spaces are bigger. I mean, when they got into this whole business of like, hey, we're going to get into more healthcare because 20% of our store is not occupied, that's what CVS would say, that's what Walgreens would say a few years back, they need to find ways to do it. So reducing their footprint is what they're doing. So I would say that the stores might get smaller because maybe they don't need to be as big, or they may close.
Bruce Japsen, Chicago-based healthcare writer for Forbes, thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour.